Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have an action-packed 3 hours for you this morning, here until 12 noon this afternoon. The last hour is going to be filled with interviews with some of the biggest names in the hockey world. Coming up right at 11 a.m., Joshua Cooper from the Tennessean is going to be joining us to discuss the Canucks Predator series. At 11:30 this morning, Rick Peckham, the voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, will be joining us to talk the Caps Lightning series. And at 11:45 this morning, to wrap up the program, from the San Jose Sharks play-by-play, the San Jose Sharks play-by-play guy, Randy Hahn, is going to be joining us. It's an action-packed show. My name is Drew Mandel. I'm joined in studio by my good friends, the analysts on this show, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Drew. I know it's a big show today. We're in the second round of the playoffs now. We have a wedding to talk about.
Drew's wedding?
The royal wedding?
That's right.
Okay.
I want to get your thoughts on everything, starting with just the general...
Prince William's suit?
General atmosphere, the suit, the dresses, you know, just your thoughts. But the second round is underway, and I am pumped up to talk about this because I went 4-for-4. Richie went... I think 6-2, 7-1.
I picked chalk, Ezzy.
But hey,
you're supposed to pick chalk.
I'm supposed to pick
who I think will win.
Well, and 7-1, you did okay there. Chalk, of course, being picking the favorites. Right. And I mean, our first round selections are all available at www.illegalcurve.com. Here's the breakdown of the program for you. The first hour of the show, the first half an hour, we're going to sort of spend looking back at the first round. Looking ahead to tonight in the NHL, looking back at last night in the NHL, a little bit of a review and preview. As I like to say, 9:30 to 10, we're going to discuss the relocation issues, the teams in turmoil, as we like to say, potential return of the NHL to Winnipeg. We'll take some of your calls. That's coming up between 9:30 and 10 this morning. 10 to 11 this morning, previews of the series. We'll see, we're one game in most of the series, except the Boston-Philadelphia one. That gets started this afternoon. So we're going to preview those series, look ahead to how they're going to turn out, give our analysis of that, and then, as I mentioned earlier, 11 till noon, today is going to be a very interview-heavy segment where we're going to talk to some of the newsmakers coming out of that series. Best way to get in touch with us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Send us an email, drew@illegalcurve.com. And if you're up and you want to get involved in the conversation and you want to talk hockey, go to the Illegal Curve chat room. Go to www.illegalcurve.com. The Cover It Live chat is there. Michael Remus of the R Desk is there. Go join Remus there. Great hockey discussion each and every Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richie, good morning. We haven't really heard from you yet.
Morning, Drew.
How you doing?
Good. Excited about the second round and happy to... although I have to say, the first round is, in my opinion, the best time of the year as a hockey fan.
It's true. It's hard. It's always... That's the problem. I mean, sort of diminishing returns often.
The hockey we're seeing now is probably a better quality because the teams are better. The teams that advance are generally better. But, I mean, it is sad to see that first round go, although, you really couldn't beat it. You could argue that was the best first round that we've ever seen.
The day after the Chicago Blackhawks-Vancouver Canucks seventh game, which was also the day after the Buffalo Sabres-Philadelphia Flyers seventh game, it actually felt like there was two Stanley Cup finals. When I was talking to people at work after the game, the amount of excitement after that game was unbelievable. Taves getting the shorthanded goal with, what, a minute and a half left, and then Alexander Burrows getting the penalty. That was one of the best first rounds, I think, in maybe post-lockout. And I got to be honest, I thought the first round started off a little slow this year. And I think when it got going, there was four game sevens. Obviously the Boston-Montreal series was also super
two
exciting, Richie.
Yeah.
But that, I mean... How do you top that? How are we gonna top that? I mean, it's quite possible with the teams remaining. I'm not really sure. I'm not really confident that any team really has the upper hand in the East. I mean, I think Vancouver's still Vancouver's still odds-on favorite now, especially since they've got rid of Chicago. But that Vancouver-Chicago series was, not only was it one of the best first-round series, really, it might have just been one of the best series in the last decade, really. Me and Richie were talking about this. Richie, I think, brought up, I said, I thought the Philly-New Jersey series in 2000 when New Jersey came back 3-1 on Philly was one of my favorite series. But
My favorite series for the longest time has been the 1997 Oilers Star Series.
Sure. Right. There was so much speed in that series.
Not just that. Exactly. You know, you had the veteran team going up against the youngsters. You had a back-and-forth series. You had Curtis Joseph making series-saving saves.
Yeah.
You had Edmonton down, I think it was in game 4 or 5, down 3-0 at home with, like, 3 minutes left, scoring three goals and then scoring in overtime. And then and that goal, Mike Greer being in the crease, you know, arguably being in the crease. You had game 7 overtime, Marchand scoring when Grant Leger blew a tire. You had all, you know, the upset. You had all the storyline there. And this was more hyped up. We're in a hyped up age now. It was 14 years ago. Crazy enough to think.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more hype, around. So this series was hyped up more. Was it any better? I don't know. But it was close, and it was fun.
Before we get any further, let's look back at last night in the NHL. We had we had game one going on in Washington, Tampa versus Washington. Tampa coming off a 7-game series. Washington, the well-rested team, they took care of business in 5 games. They haven't played in about, I think they hadn't played since the previous Sunday, so about 5 days off.
That's right.
And they looked a little flat. And Tampa Bay took it to them, and the final score in Washington last night, Tampa Bay 4, Washington 2.
We're going to preview this series, and I actually wrote this preview for Hockey Perspectives, this series in depth. I think Washington will win, even though Tampa won last night. But one thing I think we'll notice is that Tampa's going to look like a lot different team, Ezzy, because there's a lot more room out there than there was against Pittsburgh. And I know Washington has improved defensively, but they're not great defensively. They've improved defensively, and Pittsburgh had to adjust their game, already being a pretty good defensive team, to adjust their game accordingly based upon Crosby and Malkin's absence. And they were as good a defensive team as you were going to find in the playoffs. So Tampa's going to have a lot more room for those creative forwards to play around with.
I agree with that. I think Tampa, I pick Tampa in the series.
Give it away. We're going to get to that in the second hour.
I just want to say one thing about that game one,
gotta
though,
tease,
really,
tease.
Really quickly, though.
Yeah.
I think that Washington was a completely different team after the first period, which they completely dominated, and I don't know how they didn't take advantage of the fact that Gagne and Kubina both left that game, but I think that they were rusty, and
we'll see if they can turn it on.
That might be a back and forth series. The
interesting
whole time.
Schedule to that series. Game two goes tomorrow. Then they take Monday off and they play back to back Tuesday, Wednesday. So they have you don't see back-to-back games in the in the playoffs all that often. So they play back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday in Tampa Bay.
You saw it in the Boston series.
Yeah, you saw it in the Boston-Montreal series there at the end. The game 7, was, 6 and 7 was back-to-back.
Only one I believe that was back-to-back.
That's right. Yeah. In San Jose last night, in overtime, the San Jose Sharks defeated the Detroit Red Wings 2-1. Interesting stat that we tweeted about last night is that in the 2010 playoffs altogether, there were 18 overtime games. So far, one game into round two, there have been 15 overtime games. So what you're seeing is a lot of overtime hockey right now.
Overtime!
And by the way, I want to quickly point out, Drew, as you were talking about the last series, before we talk about overtime, Tampa Bay is the 7th oldest team in the league, and Washington is the 8th youngest. So that could be a factor in terms of benefiting Washington for a back-to-back game.
Sure.
In terms of overtimes, I mean, it's been incredible.
Yeah.
It shows you how much parity there is, really.
They wanted to be the NFL. They wanted every team to have a chance, and it's really pretty close to that.
Every series is close, but also this is a year. I mean, there was parity last year. This is a year where just it seems like anything that's close, no matter how much time's left. You know, Montreal, Boston, Game 7, Subban scores.
That's right.
Yesterday, San Jose tying it up, Pavelski scoring. Late in games, in third periods,
Nothing's safe.
Nothing is safe.
Nothing's safe.
And that's the most exciting part. That's the old 80s, 90s style.
Yeah.
Nothing's safe.
That's right.
3-0 lead is obviously favors the team leading, but the game isn't over. In the late 90s and 2000s, once a team had a couple-goal lead, it was over.
Because they just locked it down.
And it generally isn't this day and age, too, but for whatever reason, the playoffs have been completely different.
How many teams have actually had a two-goal lead for that long, though?
Well,
not very many.
Some teams have had a 3-goal lead and then given it up. Let's look ahead to today in the NHL. Boston at Philadelphia. That series gets underway in the city of brotherly love, 2 o'clock this afternoon. Boston at Philadelphia, really a rematch of last year's series where Boston collapsed down 3-0. And one of the first times in decades that had happened. It almost happened again, of course, with Chicago-Vancouver, but Vancouver pulled it out. But Boston at Philly, 2 o'clock. We're going to preview that series coming up in the second hour today. And the other game tonight, the game you can hear live on Sports Radio 1290. Pregame show gets underway at 7 o'clock Winnipeg time. Puck drop at 8 o'clock Winnipeg time. Nashville at Vancouver, game 2 of that series. After really a sort of boring game 1, it was very dull to watch, especially coming off the Chicago-Vancouver series, which was dynamite.
If you didn't know what time of year it was, you turned on that game, it could have been a regular season game.
I tweeted the same thing last night from my own personal account about the Tampa Bay-Washington in the middle of the second period there. It was a dull February Tuesday night Southeast Division matchup. There was no energy, nothing at all. We'll see if back now that it's game 2, maybe the last series is sort of passed from both teams, see if they get into it a little bit more here at 8 o'clock tonight on Sports Radio 1290. You can catch the Nashville-Vancouver series. Guys, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look back at the first round a little bit more in depth. We'll take some phone calls, take some tweets, take some emails, things of that nature. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Fifteen in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning. We want to hear from you. Send us your favorite, your best tweets at Illegal Curve. Send us some comments on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, or send us an email, drew@IllegalCurve.com. Boys, the first round ended, when did it end officially? Thursday? Wednesday?
Yeah. Wednesday.
Wednesday night. Wednesday night it ended with the Boston-Montreal series. I do agree with you in that it was one of the best first rounds we've ever seen. There was just something about every game had drama, bad goaltending to some extent, and bad goaltending usually is entertaining.
Yeah.
Just action nonstop, night in, night out. As a hockey fan, is it hard to replicate that going forward?
I don't necessarily think that's the case, Drew. I think one of the reasons why the hockey was so good, especially in the Montreal-Boston series and the Chicago-Vancouver series, and one of the reasons why that is, Drew, is their teams are so familiar with each other. And that's where, you know, there's hard to get an edge. The talent, sometimes maybe talent wins out, and I think in both cases it did. But it was so close, it was a coin flip. Jacques Martin did a great job in the series, and so did Joel Quenneville. I think what's happening is, you know, Montreal plays Boston 6 times a year, as they've played them many times in the playoffs, but they're so familiar with them, they know how to stop them, they know what their weaknesses are. They collapsed, you know, in that Montreal-Boston series. Montreal did similar to what they did last year, and that was collapsing down in front of Carey Price, allowing him to make the saves, and making the opposing team's defenseman, in this case Boston's defenseman, try and score from the point. Now look at it from this way, guys, okay? Zdeno Chara has a great shot. Seidenberg's not bad. But McQuaid, Boychuk, Ferentz, and Caberle. McQuaid, Boychuk, and Ferentz, nobody's scaring you with their shots from the point.
They're not scaring you as defensemen in general.
Caberle doesn't ever shoot. He wouldn't shoot if the net was open, somebody was saying shoot for $100, you know, for $1,000. He doesn't know how to do that. And then Chara, yeah. Think about that. So the strategy was to collapse and make the Boston defense beat them.
Yeah.
Did it work? I think it worked pretty well.
Well, they took him to 7 games.
If you can get
seven overtime of game 7, I'd say it worked as well as it could have.
But that's knowing the personnel and knowing what works and knowing what doesn't work and being able to practice that during the season. Because Montreal played Boston quite well during the season.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of Chicago-Vancouver, a lot of that, you know, strategy had a lot to do with it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Matchups. Joel Quenneville knew, he didn't have to experiment for the first 2 games. Because they played in the playoffs a couple years in a row, he knew Boland dominates the Sedins. So he stuck to that matchup. If they had never played before, he may never have known Boland could play the Sedins that well. Maybe it took him 3 games to do that. 4 games. No, obviously they went down 3-0 and then Boland came back later. But you understand the point?
Yeah.
Maybe if he didn't know that Boland comes back for game 4, doesn't play against the Sedins, and it's a sweep.
There was no feeling out process is what you're
exactly.
saying. Because the feeling out process was the regular season.
So with that knowledge, it's similar now to Washington-Tampa.
Because they play each other, Southeast Division rivals. They play each other 6 times a year.
When you're playing each other so much, familiarity, you know, there's certain advantages that get taken away. People know your strength and they take away your strengths.
You know, I want to talk about that Tampa Bay-Pittsburgh series for a second.
Okay.
I thought it was as dull as it could be. That was the worst of the first round series as far as I'm concerned.
It was.
Pittsburgh just, I mean, couldn't score. They had no offense. I know you're missing Crosby and Malkin, so obviously you have at least a legitimate excuse for that. But it seemed like they didn't even try to score that that often.
Well, they controlled the puck for the most part, Drew. They just don't have guys who can finish. You look at that roster, and that's my concern from the outset. They don't have guys who can finish. That's why I picked them. I mean, overall, their defense is far superior to Tampa Bay's.
Oh, absolutely. Their goaltending is the only reason why they were in the game.
It's probably superior on a season basis, although Rolston was just as good, if not better, than Fleury.
Except for that game, that overtime goal.
Right. Yeah. But overall, I mean, I think he was probably better than Fleury.
Right.
But what you have with Tampa is a lot more scores. You have talent. You have talent, you know, and that was... Pittsburgh did not have the offensive talent to win that series.
They didn't have any offensive talent. I mean, that's just it. They didn't have any at all.
We've talked about it before. As you bring a guy like James Neal in, James Neal's a good player, but he's an up-and-down player who's, you know, more apt to play with a guy like Brad Richards or Sidney Crosby if he returns. James Neal's not going to be a guy who just creates for himself all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, we all predicted Tampa Bay, I believe, in seven games. And,
no, Richie predicted them in six.
Yeah.
Well,
close
okay.
enough.
Okay, we all picked Tampa Bay, though.
That's right.
So, we all kind of thought that was going to be the storyline, and it was. And you're right, Drew. It was a dull series, even though it went to seven games. But it's to me the way Pittsburgh adapted and changed their style of play. And you know, I mean, what? Yeah, Richie, James Neal is not going. He's not a game changer.
No.
Especially without a playmaker.
Do they have any game changer? They don't. I mean, Kunitz isn't a game changer. There's nobody in the
least bit of an offensive threat.
Let's go back to what we said at the trade deadline. Alexei Kovalev's going to do nothing for you.
But they gave up. I mean, what did they get him for?
No, I realized seven.
Seven. So they gave him up for. They got him for
nothing. Too much.
But he did nothing for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course he did nothing. But that's the kind of player. He's a useless NHLer at this point, a fringe NHLer at best. I suspect he'll end up in the KHL next year trying to make grab onto one last contract.
That series came down to Pittsburgh not being able to score. The matchups were done. Guy Boucher and Dan Bylsma are both terrific coaches. I think they offset each other because they're so strong. And I think that his talent won out. But if one of Crosby or Malkin, never mind both, were there, I think we know how that series would have gone.
Buffalo-Philly. Philly's got the more talent. Nobody disputed that at all. Mm-hmm. But they also had a goaltending that made Mr. Siv embarrassed for the most part. Do you think that, should Ryan Miller have done more to win that Game 6 in Buffalo that would have won Buffalo the series?
Yeah, in retrospect, probably, Drew. I mean, you're up two goals two times in Game 6 at home, as you got to win that game. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And
sure if we can put it on Ryan Miller.
No, not
and say
just
he
Ryan
should have
Miller.
I'm not
more,
putting
though.
It on Ryan Miller, but I'm saying...
What do you mean by he should have done more, though?
I don't know. Make that one key save that the great goalies make.
I'm not so sure there is the great goalie making the great save. I know that kind of theory, Drew. But the point is that there's a game six. You're up 3-2. You're at home. You have a two-goal lead twice in that game. You have to keep the lead. And I know Philly's an offensive juggernaut, but you have to adjust your game accordingly. And you know how I know Buffalo thought they should have won? By the way they played Game 7.
When they fell apart.
They were defeated before
that
game.
Yeah, they're right. They had no lift. They had no emotion whatsoever.
No, none.
You know, and it's just, to me, they're just, I mean, that was the most disappointing part to me. I watched that.
And they were up 4-3 at the end of the second period.
That series was thoroughly entertaining. I mean, Buffalo could have shot from center and scored practically.
Drew, I think as far as Ryan Miller goes, let me put it this way. I think that he didn't single-handedly win games, but he was the reason, he was the first star, let's say, in the two of the Sabres' victories, specifically.
But he's your best player.
I think he didn't play well, especially in that Game 7. And he was pulled for that reason.
The Game 7, I'm not too worried about. The Game 7, you know, you're right. They did seem like they had an emotional letdown. I'm not too concerned about their, you know, them not showing up in Game 7. They're not as talented as Philadelphia. So for them not to show up in Game 7, okay.
But I can understand that. But Drew, that's what we said. We said there's no way. I think we all took Philly in six or seven games, right?
Richie and Ezzy had Philly in seven. I had Philly in five. Remus had Philly in six.
Okay, so we all thought Philly would win, me and Richie's reason for the seven was because we thought Miller could steal a couple games, and he did. And I mean, we're not tooting our own horn.
Offense is good, Ezzy.
But their Buffalo offense is good. But when Buffalo specifically is a team that when Miller is anything but, let's say, like 8 out of 10, they're not in it. They're a team that depends on that goaltending, just like a Nashville. Nashville is going to have absolutely no chance. We're going to preview them later, a little bit later, and talk to Josh Cooper of the Tennessean, but they have no chance. If Pecorine is even slightly off...
If he's like he was in the first round, they don't have a chance.
Yeah, I have no doubts about that.
Enough of that. I hate that clip. But
keep it up, Reem. I like it.
Yeah. I'm sure you guys love it. But that's, to me, the... I mean, I wanted to see Buffalo go on a run. I think it would have been fun, but... You know, they just couldn't do it in Game 6. They just had to...
It's a couple of failures in a row, Drew. Remember last year when they played against Boston? They were the favorite.
They were the favorite. Weren't they up... I don't remember what... Were they up at all in that series? But they were definitely the favorite.
I feel like they got beaten like 5 games.
Yeah, I'm getting old. I can't remember that far back.
Do you just want to check that? Buffalo-Boston last year?
Yeah. But to me, that was... I mean, the first round was great.
The first round was great, Drew. Obviously, the Chicago-Vancouver was the most exciting. Montreal-Boston was probably a close second. Although you couldn't match the drama of that series. And then every other series was fairly interesting. I mean, obviously the other two Game 7s, Tampa-Pittsburgh, although it was boring, but still went to 7 games. Buffalo-Philly was probably game by game with the most back and forth, most exciting, most mistakes, so the most exciting. And, I mean, you know, you had your Washington-Rangers series, which was fairly boring and predictable.
Yeah.
The Nashville-Anaheim series was very exciting. It was similar to Buffalo-Philly in that it was back and forth, and there was a lot of goals, and there was a lot of offense. There was a lot of highlight reel action.
That's right. And, the numbers bore it out that we say it was one of the best first rounds ever. Here's the television ratings highlights are through the roof. NBC averaged 1.9 million viewers for its 4 games, which is a 12% increase over last year. The last Sunday's game, Buffalo Philly 6, was the most watched NHL non-conference final game in the U.S. in 12 years. So people were tuning in. On Versus, they averaged 625,000 viewers, which was the most, which is up 8% from last year. I mean, still 624. You'd like to do more than 600,000 people, but whatever, it's up at least.
Sure.
CBC, 2.148 million viewers on average for 22 first-round broadcasts, up 49%. Of course, I mean, the Game 7 Vancouver-Chicago averaged 3.8 million viewers, which is just a huge... I mean, for a game that starts late at night...
It's 10% of the country.
That's right. 10% of the country tuned in for that game, which is just huge. And it just goes on and on and on. I mean, throughout, everybody rated had huge ratings for that.
Is it safe to say that Game 7 had the same must-watch factor or appeal as the Olympic gold medal game? I felt like I was a little bit tired, but I had to stay up and watch that entire game.
I think it had a lot of drama. I think obviously you're talking about the quality of play. I thought Chicago's quality of play, they were opportunistic. They had their chances. They took it to, you know, Vancouver a bit of the points in the third. But I thought overall they were actually outmatched.
When I stay awake,
so it wasn't the back and forth that I maybe thought there would be.
When I stay awake to watch a late night game, that means it's probably worth watching, because usually nothing gets in the way of my sleep.
Well, on that topic, a lot of people thought that the Vancouver Nashville game was going to be at its regular 9 o'clock slot, but they moved it earlier.
Well, they should.
If it's the only game.
If it's the only game, 9 o'clock on the East, 8 o'clock in Winnipeg, 6 o'clock in Vancouver. Yeah. That's a happy median for everybody.
So Drew, the NHL actually got something right as far as television programming goes.
The fact that they played 2 Game 7. Or a Game 6 and a Game 7 at the same time, and they couldn't figure out how to stagger it, is unexcusable.
Inexcusable.
Inexcusable, pardon me. You just have to figure out a way to do it. I don't care.
I agree.
You know, get a television matrix expert to figure it out, but do not start playing, Game 7s where everybody wants to watch, and Game 6s that everybody wants to watch at the same time. Work around it. I don't care how you do it, work around it.
Dude, the Tampa Game 7 was the same time as the Boston Game 7.
Right, that too. But, I mean, nobody cared about the Tampa. I'm talking about the Philly-Buffalo-Boston-Montreal Game 6 and Game 7 was at the same time. Work around that. I don't care how you have to do it. Just fix it.
I mean, you're right. Start one game at 6 o'clock. Start one game at 8. The NBA does it all the time.
That's right.
The NBA will start games in Chicago at 9 o'clock at night to account for television.
That's right. Figure it out. That's all I'm saying.
You got to do what Richie does. He has two TVs going.
That's true.
Two separate TVs going. You got both games.
Yeah.
Richie does have one of the best setups around, so props to Richard for managing to accommodate all of our television watching needs. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk return of the NHL to Winnipeg. Your phone calls, your tweets, your emails, everything. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Yeah, Drew, feel that.
Go, Drew.
Go, Drew.
Drew's been dancing in studio for those who aren't in the studio.
Yeah, Drew. Those
Drew's
are good
actually
moves,
on the, on the tabletop right now.
Welcome back to the program. I have no idea. Who was that?
Lady Gaga, Drew.
I thought so. Yeah, okay, sit down.
Drew, Lady Gaga. Wasn't that the downfall of your quest to be a host in another life?
What are you talking about?
Or Katy Perry.
Katy Perry.
Yeah.
Katy
Why don't
Perry.
You give the listeners a nice...
No, nobody cares about that story. Okay. Katy Perry, yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:34 on this Saturday morning. We're going to spend the next 30 minutes or so discussing the return of the NHL to Winnipeg. Frankly, that's what everybody...
Drew, yesterday... Actually, can I cut in for a second?
Sure.
Yesterday, I was at Portage in Maine, and nobody was there.
That's a hit.
I was sitting there by myself, and I was like, where...
What do you mean? I was there. I was the guy wearing a black hoodie, sunglasses, and sweatpants.
No, you were the guy collecting bottles out of the garbage on the corner of Core Portage and Main.
I almost got hit, but I was like Frogger in Seinfeld. I was like trying to dodge traffic. I was like, where is everybody? It's Portage and Main. Wasn't it supposed to be an announcement? Nobody was there.
Are you saying that you can't believe everything you read on the internet?
I can't believe that rumor wasn't true.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing how many people thought it was gospel, though.
Wasn't the Illegal Curve Hockey Show an official sponsor of that event?
No, nobody said the event was yesterday. We're an official sponsor of
The actual event.
No,
the fictional event.
I think we're an official sponsor of the Facebook page. I'm not sure we're an official sponsor of the event or anything. But, you know... We now have, apparently there's two teams. I mean, it sounds like, I don't know where you've been, but, you know, the Phoenix saga drags on and the NHL seems insistent on, you know, coming to a deal there, which is their prerogative. But it sounds like once, you know, if they resolve that, or even before that, there's a deal to be made with Atlanta at any opportunity.
Atlanta has proven to be a very difficult market.
That's Bill Daly quote. Is that Bill Daly?
Yes.
That's Bill Daly appearing on this hockey show.
That's right.
That's right. A couple months ago. That was really the start of the chatter about Atlanta being a possible relocation target.
Reem, do we have the clip of Bill Daly saying Drew's a really difficult host to work with?
No, but we...
It's two straight weeks you're trying to insult me as a host.
You know what? The Bill Daly quotes...
Because I love you, Drew.
The Bill Daly quotes from the show, and I mean, he had the quotes from about the arena, and we asked him about that. I think, Remus, you got that up ready to go?
The building location is an ideal...
I mean, and remember that when we asked Bill Daly that question about the arena location and about we don't live in Atlanta, we're not really sure about it, and he was quick to say it's an issue.
Yeah, he volunteered. I mean, we asked the question. I was sort of expecting the pat NHL answer. He volunteered the information that is a franchise that is probably ripe for the picking, for lack of better euphemism.
So how do you want to go about this, Drew? I mean, I guess there's a couple. It seems like, as far as we can tell.
Yeah.
That the NHL is keeping Winnipeg by in case Phoenix fails. And if Phoenix fails, then Winnipeg will get Phoenix. But if Phoenix doesn't fail, Atlanta's basically seems like a deal.
I have two questions. And, of course, we want to hear from you, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. First question is...
How long till Gary Lawless is on the line?
He's in Toronto for UFC right now. First question.
He's fighting in UFC?
No, he's not fighting in UFC. He's reporting.
Gary Lawless is fighting Georges St-Pierre, Drew?
Yes. First question... Which franchise would you prefer?
Get whichever second. One we can get, Drew. Whichever one, doesn't matter.
Yes, you have to cop out.
Yeah, thank you.
That's not a cop out.
It's a total cop out.
Whatever the team is, it's going to be our team, and it's going to change.
Second question, how long can True North wait?
Well, Richie, you're for sure saying the Thrashers.
How much longer? Let's start with the second question first. How much longer can True North wait?
I mean,
time is running out, Drew.
I assume that there is some kind of deadline, and according to Darren Dreger, it's 1 to 2 weeks, but that was 3 weeks ago, and then it was 1 to 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago, and it's 1 to... You know, I assume, Drew, that there is some kind of an end-of-May deadline at the latest. That's what I assume.
And so you're saying... You
need to be able to prepare for the draft. That's my point.
But Richard, prepare for the draft?
Yeah.
Explain why the draft should factor in.
Well, I mean, when you're an organization building towards the future, if you're buying a team, you want to have a say in what's happening at the draft. Free agency doesn't start till July 1st, but the draft is end of June in Minneapolis.
What you're saying
you want
is,
to know your organizational direction.
You're saying if True North wants to clean house in the front office of whatever team, if a team comes back here, you want them to have the opportunity to do so before the draft starts.
You
want
to have things enforced, and even that to me is too late. But end of May, absolutely at the latest. Now, you asking which team would you prefer?
Yes, that's the second. That's the follow-up question: is which team would you prefer? And consider it both from a nostalgic point of view.
Yeah.
And from an on-ice product point of view.
I don't think you can from a nostalgic point of view. It's too biased if you do that.
But maybe it is, but I think,
I know what you're saying, though, Drew.
As much as there's, a nostalgic point of view, And there is. I mean, I want the team with more talent. And the team with more young talent is, that's closer to proving itself, is Atlanta, in my opinion. I mean, you have Zach Bogosian, an up-and-coming, big-time defenseman. You have Dustin Byfuglien, although he signed to too much money as far as I'm concerned after this season, but he's an up-and-coming, big-time, you know, offensive defenseman. You have Ron Hainsey on the boat. You have Tobias Enstrom, who's one of my favorite defensemen, unheralded. He's terrific. Hainsey I don't love, but he's, you know, you have a good young core on defense. You have the likes of Brian Little, more importantly, Evander Kane up front. You added in Blake Wheeler, and you have Anthony Stewart, and, you know, have our boy Robbie Shrempf there. But Andrew Ladd is a player I really like. I think that Atlanta is, Phoenix has some really good young talent. I think Atlanta, and then I like Andre Pavlovich and net, Atlanta is closer to moving forward and taking a next step. Because people realize, we mentioned on the show before, Phoenix is actually an older team than people realize. In terms of Atlanta, Atlanta is a young team. I would like Atlanta, but I mean, that depends. You know, beggars can't be choosers, but that we're going to the premise that we can choose. And in terms of age, guys, I think we should mention this, because Atlanta is the seventh youngest team in the National Hockey League. Phoenix is, you know, the fifth oldest, depending on who's in the lineup.
Right.
Who do you want?
Okay, Richie, if we're going to go on the premise, though, I'll get back to you. Remember what you said. Remember what you were about to say, even though I rudely interrupted. If we're going on that premise that we can choose, I would agree that it's Atlanta. But and if we're from a talent perspective, you're right. I can't disagree with that at all. At all. Atlanta's a more talented team, younger team. They've got more talent almost at every position. From a nostalgic point of view, too, if I have to choose, it's obviously Phoenix.
Of course.
But if you're choosing nostalgia versus what team do you want to watch and what team should Winnipeg go after,
that's right.
I think Atlanta might get that slight edge.
Let's go. We have Brian in Charleswood on the line. He wants to talk about this issue. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. You know, I just want to talk about the issue. I saw your poll on your website, illegalcurves.com, and it's fair to say that all of Winnipeg, you know, wants the team to be renamed the Jets. And I think there's a argument among people in Winnipeg that if it's Atlanta, you can change the name. But, you know, why can't True North do what the Cleveland Browns did and assume, you know, take back the Jets name and take back the history from Phoenix like the Browns did from the Ravens? I think, you know, we all want to see the team name as the Jets, and that would just, I think that would just please everybody.
That's a great point, Brian. Thanks very much for the call. First of all, do you want the history of the Jets?
I don't think, I really do not buy into the whole negative history of a team, you know, the Boston Red Sox curse prior to them actually building a smart team, building a team a smart way, the Chicago Cubs curse as opposed to the Chicago Cubs wearing out good arms in the playoffs that year and not having enough steam at the end. The aura and the thought of bad karma is all, to me, is garbage. It's you run a team successfully and you're going to have success.
780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. Brian from Charleswood made a great point. You know, check out, if you haven't checked it out yet, check out www.illegalcurve.com. It is your home for all the latest breaking news relating to the NHL's return to Winnipeg. It's updated multiple times a day. No matter, whenever there's a new news story or article or comment or anything, it's there immediately at www.illegalcurve.com.
Drew, it's really unbelievable. Sorry, Richie, I'll just quickly get in here. It's really unbelievable how the narrative changes and how our mayor, Sam Cates, who are not in Winnipeg, how, I know, I'm just saying, I'm not saying that I'm going to go off on that
okay, in a moment or two.
You can go off. Okay. I'm just saying it's amazing how the narrative changes during this whole thing. We, obviously, Dave Manouk of our website has been tracking this, and our site has become really the premier source for all of the information. And when Sam Cates made the comments, I'm not saying that they were, you know, just or right or I agree.
They were the most
whatever.
Inappropriate comments could have made.
Okay, hold on, Drew. Let me finish. I was trying to make a point here. I'm just saying that the way the narrative changes back and forth with every little comment, that comment, even though it was inappropriate, I do agree with you, all of a sudden it became, oh, we're going to get Atlanta.
What has the one thing that True North has done better than anybody else when it's talked about, when the discussion has returned to the return of the NHL? That is, they've said nothing.
Silence.
Silence is golden in this issue. Mayor Sam Cates had no right whatsoever to open his mouth when he had no information whatsoever. He had no knowledge about anything. He was just spouting off inappropriately in an effort to get his name in the headlines on this issue. He's been on the sidelines, and he couldn't stand it. He decided, oh, no, I want some headlines on this. I want to talk about this, even though I have nothing to bring to the discussion, and all I'm going to do is hurt the efforts to bring an NHL team to Winnipeg. It was a shame what he did.
Tim, do we have Sam Cates on the line?
I'm assuming you voted Judy.
I voted for Sam.
Hey, we're not going to talk politics.
I voted for Sam, but I couldn't believe it. Everybody knows from top to bottom that the way to get a team back here is to not, you know,
but you're making
not
the,
stick a, th-
you're
a needle the in the eye of the NHL. Don't say a word. That's
you're making
all you
the
have
assumption,
to do.
Drew, that he has any effect on that.
When the NHL sources said what he did is not helpful and it's inappropriate, then that's what I'm going to take to the bank. Just don't say anything. Until you know, if you want to be on the platform at Portage and Main when they make the announcement that the team's coming back, you should be, because you're the mayor of the city. Until then, do not say a word. Period.
I was there yesterday. Nobody was there.
I know you were there yesterday. And was Sam there?
Sam wasn't there.
Okay, well.
Nobody was there.
I know that
except
nobody
for our friend Neil.
Except for our friend Neil. That's Neil and Richard standing on the corner of Portage and Main.
He had like a Jets banner with the old white pom-poms ready to go. Nobody's there. Yeah. It's just like a tumbleweed is going by.
That's all. I couldn't stand it. Why are you talking?
I think the other reason.
Why are you talking?
The other issue here, Drew, is that everything's news.
But there wasn't. I mean.
Because
yes,
there's
right.
no news, everything's news.
You're right. You're right that everything is news. But when you have to, if you are truly looking out for the best interests of getting the NHL back to Winnipeg, you've seen the modus operandi of everybody else is to not say anything. No comment has been the party line from the province, from True North, from the Chipmans, from everybody.
Drew, I mean,
Mayor is he above that? Why does he have to change what the mantra has been?
To be honest, Drew, on this show, we hear a lot of things that we don't talk about because we're not here. You know, we can report on stories that were reported, but we're not going to be here to create news and whether the stuff we hear is true or not true. I mean, the truth is until there's actual, you know, out in the open news from the NHL.
Don't say anything.
We're not going to create.
Don't say anything. We're not creating. We're not in the business of making news.
Now, I'm not saying he's creating it or not. I don't know, but you seem to.
He has no. It's like an unsourced article. I'm some guy who really doesn't know anything, but I think that the NHL is actually going to move the New York Rangers to Winnipeg. Might as well have been that.
That was a funny tweet that Seth Rohrbaugh had. He does the Empty Netters blog in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Yeah.
And he had a funny tweet that said, rumor has that Sidney Crosby's concussion is going to be relocated to Winnipeg.
You know, tons of activity coming in on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. Let's go to break.
But that's just Remus tweeting the Illegal Curve
it's
account.
It's not Remus.
Count.
It's a ton of people out there who want to talk about this.
As we'll you read, know if you had a computer.
We'll read some of the tweets on air. We'll take some more of your phone calls. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive, drive forever.
Welcome back to the program. 9:50 in the morning. We're going to continue talking about the potential return of the NHL to Winnipeg. If you want to get in on the conversation, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. You can tweet us at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, or you can even send us an email, drew@illegalcurve.com. I must say the Twitter page is blowing up right now with comments.
Blowing up at Drew's blow up.
Winnipeg guy tweets at Illegal Curve, does hashtag the Balkan even exist? The Balkan is the rumored mystery investor that's going to save the Atlanta Thrashers. You know, much like Eliyahu, for those of you who celebrated Passover recently, I think they're both they're one and the same. Lots of talk about the different teams that they're going to come here, and lots of talk about my mini rant that I just exploded about there about the mayor maybe speaking out of turn.
Nothing was mini about that, Drew.
And there's a lot of heat about that. Yeah, just for the record. If you think there's a political motivation to that, I did vote for Sam.
No, I mean, you're allowed to have your opinion, Drew.
I know. Let's talk about alignment, realignment in the NHL. There's a fabulous article available at www.illegalcurve.com about what division the returning NHL team would see in Winnipeg would see, what division they would play in, how it would affect the rest of the NHL. Really some fabulous work done by our colleague Dave Manuk over at www.illegalcurve.com. It seems like to most everybody it makes the most sense that the Jets would return and play in a realigned Northwest division.
Mm-hmm. That's if it's Phoenix.
No, I think it would be with anybody, it would make sense that everyone's expecting they'd be in the Northwest division with Minnesota, Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver. All you would see is you'd see Dallas take, if it's Phoenix, you'd see Dallas move to the Pacific.
Colorado. Dallas is already in the
Pacific. You see Colorado move to the Pacific, yeah. Yes. And then...
Dallas moved to the Central.
Dallas.
Well, now, are we talking about Phoenix or Atlanta here?
Phoenix.
Let's talk with Phoenix first.
Okay, so Phoenix, if Phoenix were to come to Winnipeg,
yes.
Phoenix would move, Phoenix would become Winnipeg, move into the
Northwest
division, and Colorado would move to the Pacific.
A pretty straight up swap.
Now, I think one of the motivations that we need to take into account here about Atlanta and Phoenix and all this is the desire of three teams from the Western Conference to move to the Eastern Conference and the pull they have within the National Hockey League. One of those is Detroit. Two of those, the second of those is Nashville, and the third of those is Columbus. All three of them want to move to the Eastern Conference. It eases their travel, and that's the main thing for them. So if Atlanta, for example, were to move to Winnipeg, one of those three teams will be able to move into the Eastern Conference. Now, all of those three teams mentioned, Nashville, Columbus, Detroit, are all in the Central Division, meaning, you know, regardless of which one of those three were to move in this hypothetical situation, the Central Division would have an open spot. So under that realignment hypothetical, Atlanta would become Winnipeg and move into the Northwest. Colorado would move from the Northwest into the Pacific. And Dallas, who's in the Central time zone, would move from the Pacific, where they're playing against every other team that has, you know, that right now is in the 2 hours over.
Yeah.
And they would move into the Central. And they'd stay in their time zone with St. Louis and two of the other three teams that doesn't move.
And, you know, if you look at it geographically, it makes a lot of sense for Nashville.
And that's what David does on the site.
Yeah, Dave, great article. Really do check it out. It makes a lot of sense for Nashville to move to the Southeast Division where they can build some natural rivalries with towns that they're close to. I mean, Nashville's quite close to, Tampa Bay and to Florida and in that area. It makes more sense.
But guys, as far as those three teams in the Central Division wanting to move to the East, Nashville, Columbus, and Detroit, you have to think, Richie, that Detroit would, just by the fact that they're an original six team and they've been clamoring to get into the East for so long, that they would be the team that would move, right?
They have the most pull in the National Hockey League, that's for sure.
I think we have Brad in St. Vitale on the line. He wants to talk about... No, not yet? Okay, Remus is still working with Brad to get him on the line there. It makes a lot of sense. Think about if Phoenix comes, it's a simple swap out. You know,
yeah, it's a pretty simple.
It's a simple swap out with how the realignment works. If it's Atlanta, it does change the dynamic of the entire NHL in the division. It probably makes more sense for it to be that way.
It does, and you have to understand the pull in the league. Atlanta people seem to be fine with bailing out on.
They really do seem. They seem to be
not only NHL. Just everybody seems to be okay with that.
Yeah, nobody in Atlanta says boo. Nobody in the NHL front office says boo.
Yeah. By the way, do we? We never talked about the bottom line, the numbers that came out yesterday or 2 days ago about the monthly losses of the Coyotes.
Well, let's talk about that. The invoice that the NHL sent. The NHL sent to the city of Glendale an invoice for $25 million to cover the losses.
Apparently, they had to put that number on an 11x17 piece of paper because a regular piece of paper wouldn't fit all those zeros.
That's very clever, Ezzy.
What about the Cupcake Summit?
Well, we talked about the Cupcake Summit last week, though, didn't we?
Did that bill come with a box of cupcakes?
It may have.
Was it $25 million and $25 because of the $25 cupcakes?
Yes. But not only that, it didn't cover the losses. I mean, that's the most amazing part. We should really be surprised, but the Coyotes lost $36 million this past season in 8 months.
Well, my point has been the entire time of this discussion. What has changed from now, like from before? What financially has changed to make there be any incentive for any businessman with any right-headed businessman to believe that this purchase, or woman, to believe that this purchase is something that will, never mind make money, but not lose substantial amounts of money. And the finances just don't work.
Richie, can I jump in here for 1 second on what you're talking about? Because I think that's an interesting point. Well, you know, a lot of the recent drama in the desert has been really centered around, let's be honest, politics and legalities, right? The whole, mm-hmm. Bond sale and the Goldwater Institute. But from more of an economic perspective, it'd be curious to see what, the investment community, guys that actually have substantial amounts of money, think of the Phoenix Coyotes. Do they think that it's a bit of a joke? Because since this team has been there, what is it estimated? They've lost $200 million? Like, if you consider the fan base, the amount of revenue that the team makes, I wonder if people are even considering buying this team, or the Phoenix Coyotes just have this aura in, this is more sports economics, by the way,
sure,
that they just have
applicable.
This. Do you believe that, they're almost considered a lost cause because they've been there for 15 years and they've in their 15th year owned by the NHL, they lost $36 million. Like, how can an investor
and
actually take that seriously?
A couple of things need to be taken into account. They didn't spend a lot of money.
No, they didn't spend a lot of money at all.
I mean, that's the biggest thing that has to be taken into account. It's a lost cause there, as far as I'm concerned.
Let me ask you this, though. You have two teams that seemingly are desperate to leave their situation. If they don't get Phoenix done, if they don't get Phoenix done, and Atlanta is not going to stay in Atlanta, what happens to one of those franchises next season?
Well,
next season is not that far away.
Eventually, they move to Quebec.
Eventually, but they don't want. The guys in Atlanta have pretty much made it clear they're not going to fund that team next season.
Nobody wants to buy a team that will lose money, Drew.
No, I know. So what are they going to do with that team next year?
They're going to have to keep them like they have the past few years, and then hopefully sell them.
Who's going to pay the bills if the players aren't getting paid? If these guys refuse to sign the checks?
Well, they own the team. They have to sign the check.
You don't have to. They can put them back into bankruptcy. You can do any sorts of things. I mean, not to rag on the CFL, because I love the CFL, but there's been numerous cases in the CFL where the owners have just walked away and stopped paying checks, stopped writing the checks. And they can go through the courts and whatever ramifications that might happen from it. But it sounds like Atlanta are not going to be willing to write checks to cover the losses of this team anymore. What's going to happen?
Also, another thing, Drew, quickly, I think the funniest part about this whole situation, and I think a lot of the talk, the chatter is going to be true, but I think one of the funniest parts about this whole situation is the volume of information that's thrown out by numerous media outlets, and I don't think anything's really, nothing's really new. I mean, and we've joked about this before.
Or
how
true.
Many more times? Yeah,
nothing
more,
new or actually
how
factual.
How many more times can we hear that's why I made fun of I made light of the 1 or 2 weeks, Like, Dreger changes deadlines so many times. I mean, what the heck is the deadline? Nobody knows. And that's not a slight to Dreger. It's that nobody knows. So anybody who's writing about it really doesn't know.
My favorite part, my favorite news organization is the Phoenix Business Journal on this one.
That's propaganda.
It's actually, the city of Phoenix is writing a press release and publishing it under the auspices of whatever the Phoenix Business Journal is. They have been consistently wrong in each and every article they've written. Whenever I see a Phoenix Business Journal article, I know that I can kick my feet up and relax because, there's not a lick of truth in anything that's being written there. Not a lick of truth. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the playoff series. We're going to talk about the on-ice action.
Previews.
The previews of the second round. We're going to talk about, we'll get to this if we can later on in the program. Lots to come. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the program. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. A tweet coming to us courtesy of Winnipeg Guy saying that somebody at Sports Money Blog, which is Forbes.com/sportsmoney, is saying that there's a $240 million offer on the table for the Atlanta Hawks and the lease to the arena, says a person looking into buying the Thrashers. I don't even know what that means. I don't believe it.
Who knows what that means? I mean, that could be somebody looking to buy the Thrashers, but somebody else is looking to buy the other two entities, and the Thrashers are for sale. And nobody wants to buy the Thrashers; they're money losing.
Yeah, it's anyways. There's so much. There's a ton of Twitter action. So we appreciate it to all of our Twitter followers who are at tweeting us there. Lots of people really that do seem to prefer the Thrashers because of the young talent that they have. Lots of people mentioning Evander Kane. Just lots of good talk about that question about which team you'd prefer. Feel free to continue to tweet us at Illegal Curve. Talk about your choices for the division alignment. What team?
You could win a lunch with Drew.
Nobody wants that. What division do you want to see the Jets or the returning NHL team play in if and when the NHL comes back? Lots of talk about that.
Is there any way that they could I know the Winnipeg Arena was demolished, but is there any way they can bring the Winnipeg Arena back? Like, did they keep that in a warehouse or something? Could they recreate the Winnipeg Arena?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Like, I don't even have a possibility to respond to that.
Oh, boy, is it.
At Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, www.IllegalCurve.com. Let's talk about on-ice NHL action. Let's talk about the NHL playoffs. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning versus the Washington Capitals. Game 1 took place last night. We recapped it a bit earlier, talking about how the Tampa Bay Lightning, even after off a 7-game series where they should have been flat and they should have been tired, came out, and it was the Capitals who looked flat and looked tired.
The Capitals dominated that first period, and you know what I thought totally changed the game was that that goal that was reversed, Brooks Lake kicked in. But they did come out flat. Tampa Bay, basically capitalized on their opportunities, and Washington didn't. They outplayed them, and, Rolison let in that the squeaker between his pads early in the game. I believe it was Semin, and, what can you say about Washington, though? I mean, they're now facing a different team, and is the same strategy going to work against Tampa? I'm not sure.
In this situation, you're facing a more offensively talented team than you did in the last round, and when you're facing a more offensively talented team, it takes time to adjust because Tampa. When Washington didn't have the puck in the first round, which was fairly rare, especially moving throughout that series, when they didn't have the puck, the other team wasn't as dangerous. Wasn't very dangerous. And in this situation, the Tampa Bay team is quite dangerous. So you have to account for that in terms of the numbers bearing it out. The Washington Capitals offense, versus the Tampa defense and goaltending, Washington has a slight advantage over the course of the year. But the truth is, once you take into account Dwayne Rolison being there as opposed to the awful goaltending that Tampa got throughout the first half of the season, it's probably a pretty even matchup, maybe a little slight edge to Washington. So, Washington's forwards, Drew. I mean, Backstrom, Ovechkin, Semin, they need to dominate this series.
Yeah,
and Backstrom has been, an enigma this year.
Yeah.
More so than Ovechkin, even.
Did Ovechkin play last night?
He was there. Sometimes what happens is with Ovechkin, Drew, is he tries to do too much himself. And that's always been my criticism of him, is that his head's not up enough to find the open man. If you watch him enough, he won't find the trailer a lot. He won't necessarily make the pass when the pass is supposed to be made. And I know he's a scorer, and you're criticizing a guy who's an absolutely A-plus player, and he is. But sometimes I think when he struggles, he tries too hard to do it himself, and other teams play into that because they know what he's going to do. And when you know a guy isn't going to look for the pass, you can cheat.
And Richie, when you talk about the best players in the world and Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin and why Sidney Crosby gets the edge, and in my opinion, it's more than just a small edge. It's because of Crosby's vision. He has the vision that Ovechkin doesn't have, and I would have to agree 100% with what you said. I think that Ovechkin definitely tries to do too much, and Ovechkin's very much a go-go-go type of player. He loves to rush. He loves to skate down the ice, stop, shoot. Everyone knows exactly what I'm talking about. He's got great speed. He's got size, and he uses it. But, as far as adapting his game, because let's be honest, Tampa Bay, even though this is their defense group isn't exactly... this isn't the Vancouver Canucks here, but they're big, and they're not going to give Ovechkin his... Ovechkin's going to always have room. He's going to create room for himself. He always does. You have to contain him. But Ovechkin's got to maybe work and adapt his game a little bit more to play with Backstrom, because let's be honest, I mean, Drew, you mentioned Ovechkin not being there. Backstrom hasn't been there for basically the entire season.
Tampa Bay's defense, as he is big, you're right. Kubina, Oland, Brewer.
We're going to get a health update on Kubina coming up with Rick Peckham in the last hour as well.
But just mention Brewer, Oland, Hedman, Kubina, all big boys.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from, Brewer and Hedman skate pretty well, but Oland and Kubina are very slow. Tampa Bay's defense as a whole is pretty slow. Yep. Lundin as well, pretty slow. And so you have to be able to take advantage And that's the key to me in this series. It really is. I mean, there's a lot of keys, granted. But it's Washington's forward speed against Tampa's lack of speed on defense. Can they take advantage of that? And I think Washington has a slight advantage in terms of their offense against Tampa's defense. Because also, I mean, you're dealing with a 41-year-old goalie in the between the pipes. And as amazing as he's been, he's still 41. And he played a 7-game series in the first round. You should expect him to wear down. On the other hand, when you look at Tampa Bay's offense versus Washington's defense and goaltending, you know, Washington's defense and goaltending this year was terrific. Their goaltending numbers were solid. You know, 6 in the NHL by the numbers that we have on Hockey Prospectus. The defense was very good as well. And, you know, when you're lining up Olsner and Carlson, you're trusting them with tough minutes. And, you know, you can allow Green to play easier minutes. And Weidman, if he was there, would really help. And Hannon's played tougher minutes, and he's continued to play tougher minutes and progressed. And his value to the team has increased. But then you got Tampa's offense. And that's why I think this is a draw here, guys, because Tampa's offense is just can be very dominant. And it can be explosive. It doesn't need many opportunities to succeed.
They didn't get many opportunities, I mean, last series, and they still managed to pull it off.
Right.
And Washington is certainly not as good defensively as
right.
as Pittsburgh
exactly
is.
Exactly right.
You know, we've been waiting all year. We've been saying Ovechkin's taking it easy. He's waiting for the playoffs to turn it on. I thought his effort on that empty net goal last night was pathetic. This is supposedly one of the best players in the league. I thought that was a pathetic effort. Your team's only down one goal. It's not like the game was over.
Yeah.
You got to get that puck. You have to win that battle. You have to get the opportunity to tie the game up and send it into overtime.
But, Drew, just on the topic of Ovechkin saving it for the playoffs, maybe Boudreau's going to have to let Bruce Boudreau, I'm speaking of obviously the Capitals head coach, maybe he's going to have to let Ovechkin go and give him more freedom. Not that he isn't. It's not like, I mean, a lot has been talked about the Capitals this year and changing their style, and they have. They really have. And they were very successful after they went on that long losing streak in December. But maybe they're going to have to open it up a little bit more and to compete against Tampa, because I don't think they're going to be able to play the same, you know, same kind of neat and tidy game that they played against the Rangers, because they're not playing the same. They're not playing the Rangers and the Capitals are, like, you know, Richard already mentioned this, they're very much different teams, and Washington's system doesn't work against a team that's this good offensively, because Tampa Bay isn't the same type of team as Vancouver, as where they're rolling out four lines right. that are going to have the puck in your zone. It's more like more of an opportunistic offense with guys that can just hurt you quickly.
And, you know, in terms of special teams, guys, I mean, going both ways, Washington's power play against Tampa's penalty kill, I think it's pretty even. Washington was 12th overall in efficiency this year, and Tampa was 16th by the numbers we have in Hockey Prospectus. In terms of the other way around, yeah, I think Washington's power play needs to be better. Tampa's penalty kill is good, and it's been amazing in the playoffs. As Drew, we're going to ask Rick Peckham later on, Tampa Bay has only allowed one power play goal in the entire playoffs so far.
39 out of 40, which is just an incredible stat
and
so
even
far.
With Pittsburgh's lack of talent on the power play, that's still an incredible stat.
Well, that's why, you know, Pittsburgh should... Listen, anytime you have a 5-on-4 advantage, you should be, you know, you shouldn't be a 39 for 40 on the penalty kill.
And on the other hand, Tampa's power play against Washington's penalty kill. Tampa's power play, very good. Washington's penalty kill was excellent this year. I find both of those to be fairly even. But I think one thing, Drew, that would worry me if I were a Washington fan would be the coaching. I don't think Bruce Boudreau is in Guy Boucher's league. And I think Guy Boucher and Dan Bylsma's strategy back and forth in the first round was a strategy between two of the best coaches in the National Hockey League. I honestly believe that Guy Boucher is the new age NHL coach, and that in 5 years from now, I hope we'll be able to, you know, to see a guy like him last that long in the same organization and him not be recycled. But 5 years from now, if Boucher is, you know, kept on by Yzerman and allowed to kind of show his worth, I think 5 years from now, many coaches in the National Hockey League will be of the same kind of...
You're talking about the matchup. What did you see Boucher and Bylsma doing with each, you know, interacting with one another in the previous series? And what do you see Boucher
BBM, Facebook?
What you had is you had Boucher employing a 1-3-1, but then changing that, maybe four guys back, dropping it and moving a defenseman up. What a 1-3-1 is it's a form of trap, but what it is you have a forward up top, okay?
On the forecheck, you
yes.
mean?
Yes. Okay. What he's trying to do is he's trying to angle the player to the boards, okay? What you try and do in the National Hockey League is, and in any league for that matter, is you try and push the play from the middle, what's more dangerous, to the boards. So the first guy is trying to angle the players to the boards. Then after that guy, there's three guys standing up, whatever line it may be. They create a line.
Do you know where is that line usually created at?
Generally a little bit before the blue line.
Before the defensive blue line?
Yes.
Okay, so between the blue line and the center line.
Close to the red line, yeah, whatever it may be. And so when you angle it, what happens is a player gets angled to the boards. On the 1-3-1, if a guy gets angled to the right side, the right winger is keeping his slot, so to speak. The center is blocking the middle, and the left winger is blocking any kind of cross-ice pass. And what you're forcing the player to do generally there is to dump the puck in. Now, it works because the one is the forward, the three are the guys lined up, one of which is a defenseman, because of course there's three and two, three forwards, two defensemen, and the defenseman in the own zone, what he does in that situation is he plays farther back because he knows a dump in's coming.
Because they can't penetrate the three.
Exactly.
So he plays so that he's usually the first one to get to the dump in and can transition the puck back out of the zone
exactly.
really quickly.
Exactly. And so Dan Bylsma would counter that with a number of different things, one of which Mike Colligan talked about quite in great detail on his site, and we must put that link up on Illegal Curve, was dumping the puck in on purpose, shooting a long pass down the ice and then the puck being tipped in. So you don't let them get set up, and then you try and forecheck. That was one of the ways they did it, and there was a back-and-forth matching game. And there was also a line-matching game. When Tampa was able to get their players up against Pittsburgh's bottom two defensemen, they had great success. So there's a lot of things that went into that series, and I don't know if Bruce Boudreau is in the same class as those two coaches. In fact, I don't believe he is. So I think the coaching battle is Tampa's advantage. Whether that can make up for the overall talent advantage that I think Washington has remains to be seen.
This is all I'm going to quickly add, Drew. Okay. I know you.
Go
we're
quick.
Right up.
Yeah.
Guy Boucher should have been Jack Adams Trophy finalist. Period. That's all I want to say.
I agree.
Okay. They got the broadcasters got that wrong.
We previously posted our second round predictions on www.illegalcurve.com. Here's where we had Ezzy. You went with the Lightning in six games. Richard, you went with the Caps in six.
Yeah.
I went with the Caps in six. Remus had the Caps in seven. And Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com had the Lightning in six. So, Ezzy, you have some camaraderie there with
Dave. Great minds think alike with me and Dave right there.
Let's go to break. When we come back, the Philly-Boston preview. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Minutes past 10 on Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Action-packed program so far and thus and still to come. Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean breaking down Nashville, Vancouver. Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, helping to talk about the Caps Lightning series. And Randy Hahn, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks, discussing Detroit San Jose. Let's continue on with our preview now going to the Philadelphia-Boston series, a rematch of last year's epic collapse by the Boston Bruins. I was reading an interesting article yesterday, I believe by Steve Harris of the Boston Herald, who said that what happened last year with Boston getting down 3-0, or Boston getting up 3-0 and then losing in seven, Philly rallying off four straight wins, was not a collapse. Because those games were very close and the puck could have bounced any other way and it could have hit a skate, blah, blah, blah. Was it a collapse last year?
Disagree. That was a massive collapse. That's part of hockey. That's not that. See, to me, that, I mean, if you don't get the bounces, you still, I mean.
I understand his argument there, Ezzy. But didn't Boston have a 3-0 lead in Game 7?
I believe so. We'll check on that.
Yeah, they did. No, but I mean.
It was 2-0, Tim
two
says?
Nothing.
Tim says it was a 2-0
yeah, you
know lead
what,
Drew, in Game
7. When it comes down to the playoffs, okay, and everyone, any hockey fan that knows this, when you watch the overtime playoffs, most of the goals are not the way you would expect them to be. They're not breakaway goals. They're not tic-tac-toe power play goals. A lot of them are. Did anyone see the San Jose goal last night? Ben Ferraro? That wasn't what you'd call a beauty goal.
No, I guess but you throw it on that.
His rationale is this, guys, and think about it from this perspective, okay? I didn't read the article, Drew, but I'm assuming his rationale is this. When Boston beat Philly 3 in a row at the beginning of the series, was that a collapse by Philly? And then when Philly in turn beat Boston 3 in a row, was that a collapse by Boston? Or was this the runs going both ways, and then seventh game was a coin flip?
When you lose four games in a row and you're the third team, I believe, that's ever done that, that's given up a 3-0 lead and lost the series, you can't blame. I mean, sure, you could look at each individual goal and say, oh, okay, that wasn't that skillful of a goal and blah, blah, blah. But you did choke. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is totally the matchup that Boston wanted. Boston wants to play Philly. If Boston is going to go to the finals, they eventually had to go through Philly. And you could argue Washington as well, but I think more so Philly, because Philly was leading the Eastern Conference all year, and they upset Boston last year in the first round. When Boston had that great team last year, they had a better team last year, I thought. This year they've gone more with youth, and obviously without Savard, and they've gone back to Thomas. But did they not want this matchup?
I'm with you. I think the winner of the series wins the East.
I think the winner of the series wins the East, but I also think that Boston's defense can't handle what Philly's going to throw at them.
Okay, but let's go offense. Let's compare offense and offense here,
please.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at Boston's offense, with throughout the year was a little bit worse than Philly. It was worse than Philly. Philly was a top three offense.
Yeah.
Boston was probably a top five, but a significant gap between the two of them.
Fine.
Would I take Philly's offense over Boston's? Yes. I mean, Philly's got, Jeff Carter issue does change things. But, when you're looking at Philly's team, you're looking at, a Briere, Leno, Hartnell, guys like that. You're looking at, obviously, Giroux now missing Carter on his wing. Richards, you have Versteeg on his side there. You have a lot of dangerous guys, especially up the middle. As a whole, I like Philly's offense better, but Boston's offense is very good. And when you're getting Krejci, and I like what I've liked is that they've added size, right? You get Krejci playing with Horton and Lucic. That's a big line. And that's a line that I think will be a lot better in this series. I think Lucic wasn't really engaged physically, and I feel like he feeds off in being engaged physically, and Philly is going to do that to him. With your other line, you have Bergeron and Recchi, and Marchand. Will Marchand's speed be a factor? That's a question. I think Bergeron might be a key to this series as well. And then, of course, you have your third lines and the Kellys and et cetera. As a whole, though, I like Philly's offense. I think Ezzy would agree with that.
Yeah, I would, like, when we're talking about Boston versus Philly, Boston is, they're missing. In my opinion, that can't, the Savard injury can't be overstated as far as what they're missing. I think that if you put Savard on that team, it's not that far behind Philly, really.
Their centers would match up. Yeah,
their centers would match up nicely, but without Savard there, you've got the Bergeron-Recchi line, and then you've got the Lucic, Krejci, and Horton line, which has been unbelievable. That's been the reason that got them through the Montreal series. Obviously, Ryder had two overtime goals, and they've been getting contributions from Peverly and Richie. Me and you have also really liked Chris Kelly. I'm not saying that you didn't, Drew, but when you're talking about now. In that Philly Buffalo series, Drew, the one guy that didn't really do anything, until Game 6 and 7, and on a line was Mike Richards, in my opinion. And then Versteeg started to play well. The line being Chris Versteeg, Mike Richards, and Nikolai Zverev, mm-hmm. and that line finally got going. And they had to, because without Jeff Carter there, now that line takes on an added role. So it's going to be very tough for Boston's defense to match up against. Basically, talented lines.
Let's talk about that, and I think you're right about that, Ezzy. I think there's an advantage in Philly's defense, Pronger, not really, against Boston's defense.
What do you think of Pronger's health?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. He's got a little bit of a break here.
Yeah.
It's hard to say, though. I mean, neither of these teams defensively were anything to write home about this year, in terms of their team defenses. But again, they were fairly similar. I would take Philly's defense, though, as a whole. Obviously, Pronger is a factor, but I would take Philly's defense as a whole. I also think, it's an interesting contrast between last series, a speedy team that was going to beat you off the rush. Boston's not built to play a speedy team on the back end, but they're not really playing a speedy team here. They're playing a big, strong team.
Right.
For the most part. And that's what Boston's made. Boychuk, big. McQuaid, tough. Chara, big. A guy like Cabrera will be taking advantage of in the boards all series here.
Yeah, but he'd be in any series. He's pretty much he's not.
But especially
be,
this series. Yeah. But yeah, and then you look at Philly. Philly's defense against Boston's offense. I think it matches up. I think it's a very close series, Drew. I really do think it's a close series.
Then what's the difference? What's going to be the deciding factor in the series?
I have Boston in seven, because I think unlike the last series, I think these teams are closer together in terms of overall talent, although I like Buffalo's offense, and I think that the goaltending is going to be the difference in this series.
You think the difference is Tim Thomas versus
whoever is going to be
whatever sieve the Flyers are trotting out.
You can't deny that. You can't deny the fact. What happened in the Philadelphia-Buffalo series was predicted by all of us when we had Anthony Sanfilippo on earlier in the season. We predicted that once they got to the playoffs, this was going to be a problem, and it was a problem in Buffalo, even though Boucher got the job done. He got them through the Buffalo series.
To me, it seems... Hang on, let me just interrupt and talk about goaltending for a second. To me, it seems that Boucher should be their number one goalie going forward because, look, he'll have games where he's awful. Just abysmal. And looks like he shouldn't play in the ECHL, never mind the NHL. But then the other games, he will look like a serviceable NHL goaltender. Whereas Bobrovsky and Leighton Bobrovsky, I think, he just can't hack it emotionally right now, and Leighton's not an NHL goaltender at any point in time.
I mean, Drew, who knows? They're just going to ride the hot hand if they can find it. I think that all the goaltenders they have aren't very good. They're all worse than Buffalo.
Laviolette's made it clear. That's exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah, but...
Boucher is the goalie, you're right.
Drew,
out of the three, he's number one, but he'll easily go to Leighton if Boucher struggles.
But there's not a big sample size to even ride the hot hand. You don't even know. I want to quickly talk about the fact that Boston didn't score a power play goal in seven games.
Okay.
That's a factor to me.
Well, when you only have one defenseman shooting, it makes it a lot easier on the defense.
But Philly's power play wasn't great either. Now, Pronger's absence has affected that. So, I mean, as bad as Boston's power play...
looks like he can't shoot.
Right, and that's a big factor. As bad as Boston's been on the power play, Philly hasn't been that much better, and Boston has to score a couple goals in the power play. So I think that's something that needs to be taken into account, that really the power play, as much of it is a factor, isn't it maybe as much of a factor as maybe some people would think, because Philly's power play isn't dominant. In terms of the penalty kill, again, they're pretty close. They're pretty close in terms of quality. I think the series turns, because of how close it is in basically every statistical category, face-offs included for the most part, I think the series will depend on goaltender play and consistent goaltender play, because I think it will be a long series. That's why I take Boston in seven.
Is Tim Thomas the best goaltender remaining in the playoffs?
Pecorine.
Carey Price said Tim Thomas was the best goaltender in the NHL. After Game 7.
I think Carey Price is better than Tim Thomas.
Carey Price isn't playing.
I think Luongo and Rene would put above Thomas, but those are those are your three Vezina guys, Drew.
Yeah.
They're all left.
That's fair. You could argue that. I agree with Ezzy.
I'm not saying
I would put those guys ahead, but they're all on the same.
I know. This is our playoff preview show, but I also think Price should have been a Vezina nominee. I really think they got it wrong.
I agree with that.
They got two big trophy decisions wrong. Price should have been there for the Vezina, possibly the Hart. I mean, Montreal's out now. Montreal played the entire season without Markov, without Georges for half the season, and Price put up those crazy numbers. But that's a different topic and show, I guess.
Let's go through our predictions for the series real quick before we go to break. And if you want to bail out now, I'll give you the opportunity. Richie, you had the Bruins in seven. You good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Ezzy, you had the Flyers in six. Are you good with that?
Yeah, well, there's no changing now, Drew. It's up on the website.
That's
we can't change that.
Put on the board. Drew, I had the Flyers in six, and Remus had the Bruins in seven, and Dave from IllegalCurve.com had the Bruins in six.
Drew, I got to give you credit, though, for picking the Flyers, because your preseason
pick was
the Bruins, though my preseason pick was the Kings, I decided
I'm
just going to go with it.
I know. Hey, I felt a little bit guilty about that, bailing out on my...
I can do that with my Pittsburgh pick for the Cup, because no Crosby and Malkin, so I could pick Tampa in the first round. But if nothing's changed with Boston, and you went all crazy about the Caberle trade, which I didn't like. You went crazy about that trade. You're bailing on Boston now?
I just think that Philly's going to be...
Phil Lieberman. You're making it your flip-flopper.
Just call me Little Logan.
In your defense, though, with your Boston pick, Savard's out, so you kind of are excused there.
I just think Philly's forwards are going to be too much for Boston's defense to handle. That's all I'm saying. I felt a little bit of guilt about doing it. Don't worry, though. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to start previewing the Western Conference Series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.